Good morning. Today's daf in Shkalim Yutes. We're on Yud Ches Amud Beis. We're towards the very bottom of the Amud. We are going to start off today with a very specific detail regarding one of the pushkas that they had in the Beis Hamikdash. This is going back to Bais Rishon. The Gemara over here is going to be discussing Bais Rishon very briefly, only because we mentioned Yoyada. We mentioned him back in the Mishnah. He had a drasha. And so as a result of the drasha of Yoyada, so the Gemara now just brings it in over here. And this is going to be very specific. Ksiv, the Gemara quotes starts off with a pasuk. Uchechalo samevil lefnei hamelech v'yoyada. So they finished. They did some renovations to the Beis Hamikdash, and so the king, this is Yehoash, together with Yehoyada, who was the Kohen Gadol at the time. So they took the money and they put it in some sort of kli. So Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman. B'shem Rabbi Yonasan Amar Shteina Davasasa. So, basically what the Gemara's concluding over here in the name of Rabbi Yonasan is that at the time there was not one, but there were two pushkas. Now, I know it's funny, in our Mishnah, we've been focusing on how there were 13 pushkas. Now, it could be that our Mishnah over here is describing, the second base of Mikdash, and the psukim that we're going through right now in Malachim is describing the first base of Mikdash. It's certainly possible. Whatever the case is, so there were two pushkas. Where in the pasuk does it indicate that there were two pushkas? So the truth of the matter is that we just need a little bit more background over here. Because really what you have is you have two pasukim, one found in Malachim Beis in the 12th parak, and the other one is in Divrei Yamim, in the 24th parak of Divrei Yamim Beis. So, and there's a discrepancy that lies between these two pasukim in terms of where exactly this pushka was. So one opinion is that it was actually in the Beis HaMikdash. The other one is that it was outside the Beis HaMikdash. So it led Rabbi Yonasan to the conclusion in Shtein Nedavasasa that really the truth of the matter is that there were two pushkas. Okay, fine. A very specific detail. Top of Yud Testament Aleph, so Tanid Debei Rabbi Yishmael. The Gemara quotes, in the name Rabbi Yishmael, Nedavachas. No, there was one pushka. Okay, interesting, the Gemara is spending a lot of time discussing and describing whether there were two pushkas and one pushka. I say a lot of time. I'm speaking in Yerushalmi terms, meaning it's going to end in just a couple lines from now. But still, it's interesting that the Gemara is really super focused on this particular point. It's a historical point. It must be that there has to be halachic ramifications, although, quite frankly, I would not be able to articulate those halachic ramifications. Anyway, the Nedava Achas, there was one pushka. Dichsiv, Ayomar HaMelech, V'yasu Aron Echad. Again, you go through the pesukim over there. Now, the Gemara here is quoting the pasuk in Divrei Yamim, but the pasuk seems to indicate pretty clearly that it was Aron Echad, that it was one chest. So, V'yineu Be'echa, Be'es Hashem, V'yikov Chur Bedalto. Okay, they put a hole in it, and people would put money in it. So it sounds like there was one pushka. Okay, so what we have over here is a machlokus amongst the Amoraim. Sounds like we just quoted a Tana. Anyway, we have a machlokus as to whether or not Yehoyada made a pushka with one pushka or two pushkas. So the hadichsiv, so the Gemara says, okay, so according to this opinion that there was one pushka, so what are you going to do with the pasuk? The pasuk says, Vayomer HaMelech, Vayasu Aron Echad, Vayinu Bishar Beis Hashem Chutza, was outside the Beis HaMikdash. So again, this is the pasuk that led the first opinion to the conclusion that there were two pushkas. But now the Gemara says, if you're subscribing to the idea that there was only one pushka, what are you going to do with this pasuk, which indicates that seemingly there was a second pushka that was outside the Beis HaMikdash? So I'm Rav Huna Mimnei HaTameim. So Rav Huna says Mimnei HaTameim. Presumably, if you're going to subscribe to the idea that there was one pushka, so what you're going to say is that the one pushka started in the Beis HaMikdash, and then what they saw is that Tamei people were unable to access the pushka, meaning if they wanted to give money, they wanted to donate. So they, obviously, as a result of being Tama, you couldn't go into the Beis HaMikdash. And so therefore, they took the pushka, they put it outside the Beis HaMikdash, and it helped out those who were Tama. Rav Huna B'Shem Rav Yosef. The Gemara ends this discussion really abruptly, which is, as we're getting used to, that's the style of the Yerushalmi. So the Gemara ends off the discussion really abruptly, by quoting a pasuk in Malachim Beis. The pasuk reads, Ach lo yasa beis Hashem sefos kesef mizamaros v'chule. Okay, now you look at the pasuk. The pasuk seems to indicate that the for this chest, so there was none of the funds were directed towards purchasing of a kli, but rather the funds of the chest were used for Bedek HaBayis. Right? The V'chulei goes on to describe how it was used for Bedek HaBayis. So what it certainly sounds like is that the other pushka was used for the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, so again, an indication that there were not one pushka, but rather two pushkas. Good. Hadron Alach, Perik Yigim HaShofar, so that's the end of the sixth parak of the Masechta. And now we have the schuss of starting the seventh parak of Shkalim. Only a short number of days before we finish the Masechta, right? We have today's daf, and then three more after that, Chav Chav Aleph, and Chav Beis. Chav Beis being a shorter daf. So here now, second to last parak of the Masechta. And now, classic discussions in terms of what happens if a coin is discovered. What assumptions can we make in terms of determining what is the identity of that coin? So, generally speaking, when we have an item that is unidentified, so there are determinants in halacha. Halacha has a number of value systems that are used in order to determine what exactly that item is going to be. So the most popular one that we're all familiar with is what's called rov. You have this idea that the majority. So whatever is the majority, and this came from the majority, so presumably, hochanach rov, you follow the majority. So that's a determinant that we're all familiar with. There's another determinant, however, in halacha, and that's called karov. Karov is proximity. When I have a coin and it is now closer to one chest over that of another chest, so karov is going to now be a determinant. How do I know that karov is a determinant? So I'm sure you all know the answer. The answer is Egla Rufa. When a corpse is found between two cities, so the Torah says that you're going to take out the measuring stick and you're going to measure which city it's closer to, the city that it's closer to. So it's that city now that's going to have to take on the responsibility of going through the process of Egla Rufa. So we know that Karav is a determinant. So there are two determinants in Halacha. What we're not going to be discussing today, although it is an important discussion, is what happens when you have an intersection, or more than that, you have a conflict between Rov and Karov. So when you have a conflict between Rov and Karov, which of the determinants is going to be stronger? Good, that's a wonderful question. Happens not to come up in today's daf. Okay, so let's start off with the Mishnah. The Mishnah starts off Moshe Nimsu Ben Eshkalim Lenadava. So let's say that I am going to find money between Shkalim and Nedava. Now, Shekel is Pushka number one. Nedava is Pushka's numbers, 8 through 13. Right? 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Yeah. 8 through 13. The six Pushkas of Nedava. So let's say I find a coin between those two. Now, how am I finding a coin between those two? So, I'll give away the Gemara. Meaning, if you assume that these Pushkas are lined up in a row, so you're not going to find a coin between 1 and 13. 1 will be at the front of the row and 13 will be at the end of the row. And you're not going to find a coin between them. However, what we're going to learn together in the Gemara, and it comes out from this line of the Mishnah, is that these Pushkas were put in a circle. So that means to say that 1 and 13 are right next to one another. 1's the beginning of the circle, 13's the end of the circle. Good. So this configuration of the Pushkas in a circle now could lead to a case where you're going to have a coin that's found between the Pushka of Shkalim and the Pushka of Nedava. So what do you do with that money now that's found between the two? So the answer is actually pretty straightforward. Karav l'shkalim, you pull Shkalim. If it was closer to the Pushka of Shkalim, you put it into the Shkalim. Nedava, you pull Nedava. If it was closer to the Pushka of Nedava, you put it into the Pushka of Nedava. So in other words, Karov. Karov is a determinant. The Mishnah goes on to say, Mechsa. Now, let's say it's right in between. It's equidistant to the two pushkas. What do I do under those circumstances? Says the Mishnah, it's going to go to Nedava. Why is it going to go to Nedava? So we're going to explain better in just a moment. Okay, equidistance over here assumes that there could be precise measuring. Okay, generally speaking, we have a discussion throughout Shas of Efshel et Samsem, Efshel et Samsem, whether or not we have the precision to go ahead and to conclude that it's really in fact equidistant. Okay, even I'll tell you the truth. Just thinking out loud. Even if we subscribe to Efshel et Samsem, but based on our own measurements, we just simply cannot see it being one closer to the other. Meaning, even in our imprecise measurements, comes out to be the same number. So what are we going to do? Okay, so the Mishnah tells us under those circumstances it goes to Nedava. And again, explanation will be given shortly. We did this. Okay. Bein Eitzim Levona. Sorry. Next case of the Mishnah. So let's say now I have coins, and the coins are found between Eitzim and Levona. So if you recall, so Eitzim is Pushka number 5. And Levona is Pushka number 6. So now I have coins found between 5 and 6. So which one does it go to? So once again, the first clue and the most important clue is going to be proximity. Karav Eitzim, you pull Eitzim. So if it's closer to the wood Pushka, put in the wood Pushka. Levona, you pull Levona. If it's closer to the Levona Pushka, put in Levona. So Maxa Lamaxa, you pull Levona. Now if it's equidistant between the two, so then you put in the Levona. And again, explanation is about to come up. I'll give an explanation in terms of why that should be. Bein Kinim Legozle Ola. Let's say a coin is found between the Pushka of Kinim and the Pushka of Gozle Ola. Let's remind one another what we learned yesterday. So we're talking about Pushkas numbers 3 and 4, and we find a coin between Pushkas number 3 and 4. Now, if you remember yesterday, we had a machlokas between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim, what the allocation is of the Pushka of Kinim, and what was the allocation of the Pushka of Gozle Ola. According to Rav Yehuda, so all of it would go towards Ola, carbon Ola, of birds. It just would be whether or not it come from the Torah, would come from the Ben Yonah. That was the opinion of Rav Yehuda. However, according to the Chachamim, which is a majority opinion, which we're going to assume right now, this Mishnah subscribes to. So the money put into the kinim, that's for chova, that's for obligation. A woman is obligated to bring a pair of birds because she had a baby, and now she is concluding her tahara process. And so part of the conclusion of a tahara process is a pair of birds, one's a chatas, the other ola. So she takes the requisite money, she puts it into the pushka of kinim. The Oledis is not the only one who's going to be bringing a pair of obligatory birds. I'm just giving one example. However, the next one, Pushka number 4, according to the Chachamim, that's for Nadava. Nadava obviously is going to be Ola. So all the birds, all the money put into Pushka number 4 are going to be for an Olas Nadava of birds, that is. Okay, so that's the Shita of the Chachamim, and that's what we're going to be assuming now is the position that we're following. So, Pekinim goes Leola. So, this part we all know already. Karvla Kinim, you pull a Kinim. Karvla goes Leola, you pull a goes Leola. So, again, proximity is going to be the determinant. However, Mechza Lamechza, but if it's equidistant, you pull a goes Leola. So, the Mishnah says that it's going to go to goes Leola. So, it's going to go to Pushka number 4. And not to number 3, if in fact it's equidistant. So, that obviously also is going to demand an explanation. We're going to give an explanation in just a moment. I know I've been promising it already 3 times over, but it's coming. Now let's say that we found money between a pile of money that's chulin, has no kedusha whatsoever, and Meister Sheni. So what do I do? Karv lechulin, yipul lechulin. Lemeister Sheni, yipul lemeister Sheni. So first of all, you look at Karov. If there is a proximity, if it's closer to one pile over the other, so that's going to be a determinant. Mechza lemechza, but if it's equidistant, you pull a meiser sheni, you're going to put it in the pile of meiser sheni. And zaklal. And now the Gemara says, now in all these cases of equidistance, so we're going to give a rule, and it's going to help us understand every one of these cases of equidistance. And that is, hochen achar karov lahakel. Now, as far as karov is concerned, karov is going to be the determinant. And we do not take the factor of which one's more Mekel, which one's more Machmir. If we have a Karov is going to tilt the scale, and that's it. And again, it's interesting because there are considerations regarding Rove. And again, as I mentioned at the beginning of the Mishnah, there is a discussion to be had. The Gemara has a discussion in terms of whether or not Rove versus Karov, which one is going to win out. But again, we're just going to leave Rove out of the discussion altogether. I know that's very difficult to do. And in terms of the determinant of Karov, so that's going to be a determinant in of itself, even if the result is going to be a kula. However, mechza lemechza, but if it's equidistant, so then what we're going to do is we're going to be machmir, meaning we're going to go and side in the direction of which one is going to be the bigger, the larger chumrah. So now what we can go back to is look at all the cases of the Mishnah and we could cite the cases of equidistance, and now we basically going to have it an answer to every one of the cases of the Mishnah, an explanation. Meaning, the first case of the Mishnah is that it's found equidistant between Pushkas numbers 1 and 13. 1 is Tiklin Chadatin. 13 is going to be Olas Nadava. So, which one is more Chamor? Now, that one's a bit tricky, I admit. In fact, it's so tricky that the Gemara is going to help us understand why necessarily 13 is going to be the Chumrah. Right? Why Olas Nadava is going to be the Chumrah as opposed to number 1? That one's a little bit tricky. The Gemara is going to make that point. Okay, so let's move past that one. Let's go to the next example of the Mishnah of equidistance. That's numbers 3 and 4. So when it comes to number 3, which is kinim, and 4 goes le'ola, and again, assuming that the kinim is the chatas ola combination, and the goes le'ola is the ola-ola combination, and now I find it between in the middle, so I'm going to, and it's equidistant. So now I'm going to move it, says the Mishnah, to goes le'ola, because when valuing between ola and chatas, ola is higher. Ola gets totally burnt on the mizbeach. Chatas are eaten by the kohanim. Fine. So we're going to tilt in the goes le'ola direction. Now it's going to present problems, and the Gemara is going to raise that, and good, and the Gemara is going to address those problems. But ola is more chamor. And then the third example of the Mishnah is a coin found between Eitzim and Lavona. A coin found between Eitzim and Lavona, and it's equidistant, so it goes towards Lavona. So that's easy, meaning Eitzim is fuel for a carbon. Lavona is actual carbon itself. So over here, if it's a question of carbon or machshiri carbon, I'm going to go with carbon over machshiri carbon. Okay. If you are following this discussion well, so you probably are wondering, there are many cases in the Mishnah that the Mishnah did not go through. What happens when a coin is found between 1 and 2, 2 or 3, 4 and 5, 6 and 7, and what about all the final 6 pushkas? Well, the final 6 pushkas seemingly are not going to be much of a challenge because they're all to the same. To the same destination, they're all going to go to the Keitz HaMizbeach. Okay, I could make an argument why it still matters for Pushkas numbers 8 through 13, but right now I'm not going to do that in the interest of time. Anyway, so the Mishnah doesn't give so many examples. The Mishnah really limits itself only to 3 examples. Okay, the Gemara is going to wonder that in just a moment. One other thing just to finish up, wrap up before we start with the Gemara, and that is that it helps us understand the last case of the Mishnah. Last case of the Mishnah is that I find a coin between Chula Maaser Sheni. So again, we first start off with asking the question, what was it closer to? That's going to be the determinant. Wonderful. And that's why, if it's closer to Chula, it goes to Chula. Closer to Maaser Sheni, goes to Maaser Sheni. But what if it's equidistant? Okay, good. So now we know the rule. The rule is that if it's equidistant, so you're going to go with what's more machmer. Obviously, Maaser Sheni is more machmer than Chula. Okay. We start with the Gemara. The Gemara over here, Lo Hutzurcho, Dala Ben Shkalim Mekinim. Basically what the Gemara is asking, I know we already gave the answer away, but basically what the Gemara is asking is, how do we have a case where you have a coin between Shkalim and Kinim? Meaning, Shkalim is the first of the Pushka. Kinim is the last of the Pushka. How do you have a coin between them? So, again, we kind of give the answer away, but, I had the distinct advantage of already having seen the Gemara. So Rabbi Avman b'shem Rabbi Pinchas kemin buchli ar hayu osif. The pushkas were configured in a circle like we described in the Mishnah. Good. Mechza lemechza yipul nadava. So now, if it's halfway between them, so what you're going to do is you're going to take it and move it to nadava. Lo tzrucha. Let's skip these words over here. The Gemara says to skip them. Okay. Skip a line of the Gemara. Easter by Meimar Shema Yipul Shayare Elishka. The Gemara now just gives an explanation. Okay, I mean you could ask the question, but regardless, let me articulate. When the coin is found equidistant between Pushkas numbers 1 and 13, 1 is the Tiklin Chadatin, the Shkalim of this year, and 13 is the Nadava. So what do we say? Equidistance means that I'm going to move it now into the Pushka of Nadava, and the Gemara now wants to know why. Meaning, why is that necessarily more chamor? Aren't we going to take the shkalim chadashim and use it to buy karbanos? So it's carbon versus carbon. So why do we say the 13 is more chamor than number 1? That's the Gemara's question. Okay. And the answer is, there are actually two answers. Number one, he's to buy Meimar. So there are some who say, Shema Yipulu Shayare Lishka. Because when I put a shekel in the Tiklin Chadatin, remember, there are going to be three withdrawals. We go back to the beginning of the Masechta. Those three withdrawals, so that's what's called the Truma. So yes, it's true that Karbanos do come from Trumas Halishka. But do you also remember that we had what's called Shayare Halishka? Any of the remaining coins in that chamber, so they were going to be used for, and oh boy, there were so many opinions earlier in the Masechta in terms of what they're going to use for, but they're not going to be used for Karbanos. They're going to be used for various forms of temple upkeep. So if you take a coin and you put it in the Tiklin Chadatin chest, yes, it could be used for carbon, but it could also be used for Bedek Abayis. As opposed to if you put a coin in Pushka number 13, it's for sure going to be used for a carbon. Okay, so that's why 13 is more chamer than 1. That's one explanation. Easter by Lameimar, Mechza Lamecha, Kamisha Mace. Or another way to say it or to look at it is that if I have a coin that's equidistant between 1 and 13, it's like somebody donated money and he died. Okay, the analogy is a little bit rough, but it's the Gemara goes on to explain. The Amar Rebbe Yasa Ad De Anataman. You know, when I was there, of course, meaning Bavel. So Shamitz Kal Rav Yehuda Shal Shmuel. I heard the following dialogue between Rav Yehuda and Shmuel. Rav Yehuda asked Shmuel, here for Shiklo V'meis, a person sets aside his shekel and he dies. And now what do you do with that shekel? So Amar Lo, Yipul Adava. So the answer is put in a Dava. So over here, when I have a coin that's equidistant between number 1 and 13, it's tantamount, it's analogous to somebody setting aside a shekel and he died, where the halacha is, as articulated by Shmuel, he put that in a dava. So similarly over here, a coin that's equidistant, and I no longer have the determinant of karov, so you put it in a dava. Okay. The Gemara just has one end note over here. Asiri sa'ifa shalom. Let's say the Kohen Gadol sets aside money for his minchas chavitim. Kohen Gadol is going to be offering a mincha daily. So now, he sets aside money for it. There comes out to be surplus of that money. So Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Yolicham Li Amar Melch, Rabbi Yochanan says it has to be disposed of. And Rabbi Lezer, Amar you pull it a Nedava. And Rabbi Lezer says that you put it in the Pushka of Nedava. Any of the Pushka's numbers 8 through 13. And again, it's the same basic idea that we saw B'Shem Shmuel, which is that if I have a shekel and it's now no longer assigned to an owner, so it goes to the Pushka. Similar idea over here. Okay. We are now, so that took us to the case of the Mishnah of finding a coin between 1 and 13. Now the Gemara is going to move to the next case of the Mishnah, finding a coin equidistant between 3 and 4, between Kinnim and Gozlei Ola. So the Gemara now continues this discussion, V'kasha V'yishchatos Kreva Ola. Good. Hopefully you were bothered by this. The Gemara now is going to ask, So I have a coin now equidistant between 3 and 4. 3 are coins set aside for a pair of obligatory birds, meaning one's an ola and the other's a chatas. 4 is all olas. It's all nedava. So now I have a coin, it's equidistant, which means that I don't know which one it came from. So I'm going to take it and put it in 4. Why? Because 4 is more chamor. Because ola is burnt kulo ala mizbeach. The Gemara says, okay, but look, it's really possible that that coin came from chest number 3. And that coin represents a coin set aside for a carbon chatas. And now what are you doing over here? Seemingly what you're doing is you're taking a coin set aside for a chatas and you're redirecting it to an ola. And I didn't know you were allowed to do that. The Gemara says, Vikashya, v'yesh chatas kreva ola. Are you allowed to do that? So, chizkiya b'shem rabbi shimon malakish. So tonight based in u'ala moser shikruvu olos. So the Gemara says, okay, under normal circumstances, you can't take a carbon chatas and redirect it as an ola, but we're talking about money over here. Money's fungible. And so what you could do is that, and not only, it's not what you can do, it's what Beis Din does. Meaning every time you put money into one of the pushkas, it's done al tanai Beis Din. Right? Beis Din has now the ability, if necessary, to take that money and redirect that money. This, the Gemara over here describes as tanai Beis Din. So that if I have any surplus money, now admittedly, we're not really talking about a case of surplus money. We're talking about a coin that is now found equidistant between the two pushkas, but basically, we're going to call that a surplus coin. And so, since this is now in its monetary form, and since the money is fungible and can be used and rerouted based on the Tanai Beis Din, so good. So you could do it. You could take a coin, even if in fact it was put into the Pushka number three, but for whatever reason fell out and never made it in, whatever the case is, and it's now equidistant between three and four, you're going to put in four and redirect it to four based on this Tanai Beis Din. So the Gemara says, fine. Haisha azos b'mayim is kaperas. So the Gemara says, okay, but you solved most of the problem, but there's still a pretty big snag in the solution. In that, again, the possibility is that this coin was supposed to go into Pushka number three. So now that means to say that there was a woman who attempted to put a coin in Pushka number three for her chatas in order to achieve kapara. And now, for whatever reason, the coin is not closer to number three. It's somewhere now equidistant between three and four. And so now we're going to take it and redirect it to four. So now this woman who wanted to receive a kapara is now going to be receiving a kapara based on this determination that instead of putting in number three, we're going to put in number four. So the Gemara says, that's no good. So I'm Rav Yitzchak, Tanai Beis Din, I'm a sapik as a kinim, I'm a sapik as a psulos. So the Gemara says, okay, so who do we turn to in terms of making up for this lost coin? So we turn to the suppliers. Now, these suppliers, right, they've got hit earlier in the Masechta, and they're going to get hit again, right? Suppliers, if there's fluctuation in the price to the advantage of the Beis HaMikdash, so advantage goes to the Beis HaMikdash, so suppliers are going to have to supply based on the cheaper price. Let's say the price goes up, suppliers are going to have to take the hit. Okay, good. That's what we discussed earlier in the Masechta. What we're also discussing now in the Masechta is that the suppliers are birds. So if there's any kind of shortfall of money in the Pushkas, like this example over here, where we thought, we didn't know where it was supposed to go. Halacha tells us to put in Pushka number four. So now we turn to the suppliers and say, look, there was a shortfall and you have to make up the shortfall. Okay, so once again, that it becomes the responsibility of suppliers. Now, again, I made this comment before, but it's worthwhile making again. So who's going to want to supply to the Beis HaMikdash? So the answer is a very religious-minded individual. Meaning, obviously, as a supplier, you're certainly entitled to make money. But at the same time, however, you're exposing yourselves to risks and taking financial hits. Okay, fine. So so somebody supplying to the Beis HaMikdash understands that. But still, the zchus and the kavod and the ability to facilitate the avod in the Beis HaMikdash. So somebody who is religious minded is going to say, good, I'm ready to take all that on. I have the zchus of supplying to the Beis HaMikdash. Now, Lord Surcha, Dala, Bein Ola, Le'etzim, Le'levona, Le'zav, Le'chaparis. The Gemara's next question over here. All the cases in the Mishnah that the Mishnah didn't go over, right? In other words, the Mishnah only, when all said and done, of the 13 Pushkas and of money found between any one of them, the Mishnah only highlighted three cases. The Mishnah highlighted cases where the coin was found between 1 and 13, between 3 and 4, and between 5 and 6. And there's so many other cases in the Mishnah that the Mishnah could have mentioned, and the Mishnah didn't mention it. So the Gemara wants to know, so what happened over there? What happened to all those cases? So the Gemara says, well, look, as far as the Mishnah was concerned, we have a rule. The rule will tell us what to do. In other words, in all these cases, when you have Karav, you go with Karav. When you have Mechsa, you go with Chumra. Okay. And so, that's the easy part. The hard part now is to go back over every one of the cases in the Mishnah and make the determination which one is more Chamor. So like, for example, 6 and 7. It's right. That one's easy. So 6 is Lavona, 7 is Zavla Kaparas. Lavona is an actual carbon. Zavla Kaparas, so that's the, that's gold for making Kalim. Okay. So if it's the actual carbon versus the kalim, okay, good. So, right, you imagine that carbon goes over kalim. Another case that the Mishnah didn't bring up is a coin found equidistantly between 4 and 5. Eitzim and goes le'ola. Obviously, a carbon is gonna take more precedence, is gonna have more kedusha than that of the eitzim. The eitzim are just simply machshirim, fuel to burn. It gets even between 2 and 3, right? I think that's also a pretty easy call. Tiklan HaTikin versus Kinim. Kinnan, we know for sure every coin going in there is going to be a carbon. With tikkun l'natikin, that's not the case. Tikkun l'natikin, and any back taxes that people owe are not going to go towards karbanos. They're going to go to temple upkeep. Okay, so we pretty much know how to address all the cases in the Mishnah based on the ruling on the last rule of the Mishnah. Then, just one more follow-up point, and that is, okay, so then why did the Mishnah give us the examples that it did? So, but you probably figured out already, because all the examples that the Mishnah gave us, those were super not clear-cut. Meaning, first of all, 1 and 13, right, we didn't know that the shofars were configured in a circle. So the first example of the Mishnah, 1:13, tells us that they were configured in a circle. Kinnam and Gozle Ola, so as Gemara went through. So that situation is fraught with problems. Meaning, even though I'm going to take the coins and I'm going to put those coins in Gozle Ola, because those are Olas as opposed to Kinnam, which some of them are Chatas, half of them are Chatas, but still, that presents the problems of redirecting a coin from Chatas to Ola to Tanai Beis Din. That presented the problem of the woman who need a kapara are not going to receive it. So we turn to the suppliers for the shortfall. Fine. So the Mishnah had to go over that case because that had a chiddush. What about the Mishnah's case of Eitim to Lavona? Okay, that one's a little bit tricky. That meaning, I think we would have figured that out on our own. That Lavona has more kedusha than that of Eitim. Eitim are machshirin. Lavona are actual carbon itself. Okay. Anyway, that ends our first discussion of today. Pretty much the first half of today's daf. We go on. Maos, we're at the second mission over here in the seventh parak of Shkalim. Maos and Himsul Lifnei Socher Behemala Lola Meiser. If I have coins found between people who are selling animals, so that's going to be Meiser Sheni. The money's going to be assumed to be Meiser Sheni. Now this psak of the mission over here is in fact challenging. Money in front of the sellers of animals. So first of all, we have to assume that we're talking about in Yerushalayim. But still, everyone's buying an animal in Yerushalayim and using Meiser Sheni money for that animal, where I have an undetermined coin that's found in front of the store or in the store, and I assume it's Meiser Sheni money. So that, admittedly, that's a little bit tricky. The Tikkun Charatin goes into a lot of detail over here in terms of explaining why that should be. So the basic premise is the following, that consider that everyone who's going to Yerushalayim probably is going to come up with Meiser Sheni money. Now remember, Meiser Sheni, that's the second 10% that is taken off in years numbers 1, 2, 4, and 5 of the Shemitah cycle. So in those years, now everyone, instead of taking the actual Meiser Sheni, which is going to be very difficult, so they're going to take the Kedusha and put it onto money, bring the money into Yerushalayim. Now what does the Torah say? That you're going to go to Yerushalayim and you're going to buy B'chol Asher Tavas Nafshecha. Any food you want, it has to be consumable good. And the assumption is that what people are going to buy with that money is meat. And the explanation, it's good, but it really needs more. See the Tikkun Charatin inside, where he really does give even more detail in terms of why it is specifically that we're so confident and sure that all monies that are found in front of the Socher Behema, the sellers of animals in Yerushalayim, are necessarily going to be Meiser Sheni money. I know I spent a little bit of time beating this point, but it's an important point, and it needs clarification. Now, Uva Harabayis Chol. Now, if I find money in Harabayis, now there's no commercial activity, there's no sales going on over there in Harabayis. If I find money in Harabayis, it's going to be Chulin. Okay. Tosos in the Bavli. Is bothered by the question. No, you're not allowed to bring your wallet into Har Abayis. So why would there be chulin money altogether over there in Har Abayis? Anyway, all right, let's just leave it at that. If I find money in Har Abayis, we assume it's chulin money. Uvi Yerushalayim. Now, if I find money in Yerushalayim, so it depends what time of year we're talking about. In other words, not in front of the animal sellers. Just you find money in the streets of Yerushalayim. So Bishar Kol Yom Asur Shana Chulin. So any other day of the year, most of the days of the year, it's going to be Chulin. However, if Shas a Regal, but when it comes to Alila Regal, Hakol Meiser. So everyone's coming up with their Meiser Sheni money on Yantiv when they're Olah LeRegel. So therefore, we assume that money that's found anywhere in Yerushalayim area during Aliyah LeRegel is going to be Meiser Sheni money. Basar Shenimsa Bazar. If I find meat in the Azar itself, Evar Molos, if it was cut into limbs. So if the kind of cut is limbs, So then you assume it's an ola, because that's what we do with the carbon ola. We cut into limbs, then we put it onto the mizbech. Vechatichos, however, if they're cut into bite-sized portions, so then we assume that's a carbon chatos, ready to be eaten by kohanim. Over Yerushalayim, now if I find meat in Yerushalayim, zivchei shlamim, so we assume that it's shlamim meat. So zevezetu batzurasavi etzelebeis asreifa. Now, just because we've identified what carbon it is, doesn't mean that we're allowed to eat it. Meaning, consider now that stam, there was meat that was discovered, right? In other words, somehow it escaped our attention, and then it got our attention back. So, in other words, what happened over here is that it went through a hesach hadas. The Gemara is going to use that language almost. So it went through Hesach Hadas. So at that point in time now, so you can't eat it as a carbon for reasons which we're going to articulate in just a moment. So what you need to do is that you need to need to dispose of it. To dispose of it right now, we don't know for sure it's disqualified. You can't burn a carbon if you don't know for sure it's disqualified. So you have to go through absolute disqualification. How do you do that? A process called Ibur Tzura. We go over this point numerous times. When talking about proper disposal of a carbon, Ibur Tzura, kipshuto, means that you leave it overnight. Now it's going to be disqualified by being nosar. And so now that it has a psul gomor, it has an absolute disqualification. So now you dispose of it correctly. Now you can burn it. Nimtza b'gvulin, now if I found meat anywhere outside of Yerushalayim, so it depends on the cut we're talking about. Avarim, if it was cut into the limbs, nevelos, we assume. Well, why were they cut into limbs? Because it's a nevela. And so therefore you can feed it to your dog. Chatichos, mutaros. But if it's cut into regular cut pieces, so then we assume now that it's kosher meat, and therefore it's going to be mutar. Now that is something amazing. In other words, Tom, you found meat, and now because of its cut, so now you assume that's kosher meat, so stay tuned because that's going to need a little bit of clarification. Now, if it's during any one of the times of regal, where there is a lot of meat around, so there the cuts would be small, the cuts would be large as well. So many people in Yerushalayim looking to eat meat on the Yontif time, so even if it's cut in these large limb cuts, it's still going to be mutter. Okay, couple discussions to be had in the Gemara. Number one, Lord Sorcha de Lo Baharabai's Kodesh. So how can it be that you find money in Harabai's and it's Chulin? Meaning that was what the Mishnah said. So Rabbi Ba, and the Gemara is basically confounded, meaning why should that be? So the Gemara's answer is Rabbi Ba, Rabbi Chia, B'Shem, Rabbi Yochanan, Chazak, Hashem, Akon, Motzi, Menalishka, Ma'os, Achu, Mukhulan, Ala Behema. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Because look, yes, it's true. There's a collection of money. In fact, that's been our whole Masechta. How there's a whole collection of money and it's in the chambers. And the chambers, they're located in the Harabais. All that's true. So there's a lot of Kodesh money in the Harabais. Point taken. But the Gemara says, but here's the story. Any single time that there's going to be an expenditure of that money, what the Kohanim do is that before taking it out of the chamber, they pick the money up. They purchase the animal, exchanging the kedusha from the money to the animal. Then and only then do they take the money out of the lishka. The Gemara says that's a general rule. So every single coin that is spent and taken out of the lishka, by definition, is going to be chulin. Good. That's the Gemara's explanation as to why you find any money in Har Bayis. By definition, it's going to be chulin. So the Gemara continues. Okay, so over here, the Gemara now discusses what happens when you find limbs in the azara, pieces in the azara, or slices in the Yerushalayim. So the halacha is that we have identified what it is, but you can't eat it. Why? Because it went through Hesach Hadas. Good. So that's what we said back in the Mishnah, and the Gemara now is making this point really clear. So he see a das, right? In the Bavli, it's hesach das, but he see a das, he see a das tom ibur tzura. So what it needs is that it needs ibur tzura, meaning that in of itself it is disqualified, but it's not a psul haguf. Now, hopefully, there is some, it conjures up a memory. Because back in Pesachim and Daf Lamed Daled, we had exactly this discussion. The Gemara in Pesachim, Daf Lamed Daled, talked about the psul of Hesach Hadas, that when you have a karban, and now our attention has been diverted away from the karban, so now Hesach Hadas, and that is a disqualification of the karban. Now, disqualified why? So the Gemara in Pesachim says either one of two possibilities. One is that it, because now that you have taken your attention away from it, it has been unguarded now for a period of time, so it's possible that it came into contact with Tumah. We don't know, but it's certainly a possibility. But that means to say that the psul of Hesach Hadas is not a psul haguf, it's just to simply, it now opened the possibility of Tumah. But it's only a possibility, which means that then if you want to make proper disposal of it, so you now need it to become disqualified with a definitive disqualification of Ibur Tzura. Fine. The other possibility of the Gemara in Pesachim is that Hesach Hadas is a psul haguf. It is an inherent psul in the karban. And so therefore, if it underwent a Hesach Hadas, so then you could dispose of it right away. Our Mishnah, and the Gemara goes on to explain, is going with the former position and the Gemara Pesachim, not the latter position. And the Gemara spells it out. We're going back to the Gemara. Rabbi Elazar b'shem Rabbi Yoshe, he see Hadas Toni Bertsura, Am Rabbi Yoshe Masis Amrakein. The Mishnah supports that too. Bertsura Saviyatzel Beisos Reifa. So the Mishnah says that it needs Ibur Tzura. You have to let it lay overnight, and only tomorrow can you burn it. Why? Didn't already undergo Hesach Hadas? The answer is yes, but Hesach Hadas is not a psul haguf. Am Rabbi Yosi v'yeus. So and Rabbi Yosi says that it's very good. Meaning I agree. La'ach lo'inat yachol sham niskalkel tzuraso. So you can't eat it because it itself also might have already gone. Gone through the process of kilkul tzura, meaning you found the meat over here, and you quite frankly don't know anything about it. Meaning, yes, you know that it probably it's a karban, but outside of that, did it come tameh? What did it already expire? These are all possibilities. However, lefam kain tzarich meimer to batzura savi etzel beisas reifa. But to burn it immediately, that you can't do because you don't know for sure that's possible. So therefore, what you must do is you allow it to go through the process of ibur tzura. And then you can properly dispose of it. Continuing in the Gemara, Nimtza Begvulin. If meat is found outside of Yerushalayim. So Rabbi Chris, Rabbi Shem, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, Ivarim Nevel, Sokin Aleim, Mishum Nevela. So let's say the cut of the meat that you found are limbs. So you assume it's Nevela. Now, how strong an assumption is it that's a Nevela? So Rabbi Chris is quoted over here in the name of Rabbi Yosef. It's a firm assumption, meaning that if it's cut into limbs, it's not we're guessing that it's a nevela, it's a nevela. The evidence is overwhelming, to the point where you're going to get malchus if you ate a b'mezid. Masis amarkein, evar nevelas v'chatichos mutaros. So, and look, a simple reading of the Mishnah would indicate that. Because the Mishnah says that when you have the limbs of a nevela, I'm sorry, when they're cut into limbs, it's a nevela, and when it's cut into butcher's cuts, meaning cuts that you and I would eat it, so then it's going to be mutter. So chatichas mutar slomamish. Now, when the Mishnah says mutter, what do you think the Mishnah means? It means mutter. Mutter means mutter in the Mishnah. So then, so when the Mishnah says nevela, it's not that we're guessing it's nevela. It's that the evidence is so strong that we're saying that it is a nevela. To the point where if you have Adam and they warn you not to eat it and you eat it, you're going to get Malkus. Chris, Rabbi Shem, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, im hayu mechurazos mutaros. Now let's say they're stitched together. In other words, the pieces of meat are stitched together. So at that point in time, who's going to go through the trouble stitching it together if in fact it's nevela? So therefore, if it's stitched together, it would seem to be a pretty strong indicator that it is in fact not a nevela. The Tiklin Chadatin over here says, perhaps, the Gemara does not make this point super clear, but perhaps the Mishnah, the Gemara's point over here is that even if it was cut into limbs, meaning even as cut into limbs, but it was stitched together, they were sewn together, so then you could say that it's mutter, that's not a nevela. Okay, bit of a chiddush, but you could suggest that. Okay. Last thing for today. Cases that we're familiar with. We heard this in the Bavli already numerous times. I have nine stories, and we're gonna do both sides of this discussion. If we have nine stores that sell Nevela and one store that sells kosher meat, so nischalfu lo choshesh. So, if let's say somebody bought meat from one of the stores and does not know which store he bought it from, so then what do we say? We say the halacha is kavua. And what's the principle of kavua? When the suffix is coming from a stationary place, otherwise here in the case, the stores themselves called kavua kemechsa mechsa dami. So then we say that it's a balanced suffix of 50-50, but over here, it's a suffix, all right? So therefore, of course, we're going to be machmir. Ulin nimseis hochanacha rav. Now, if it comes to nimseis where you just discover it in the street, meaning that the meat left the store and went into the street. Now, meat does not go up, pick up and walk out, but it doesn't matter. The point is that it moved, and then that's what's called the parish. Called the parish meruba kaparish. So then it comes from the majority. And in the first case over here, the majority stores are not kosher. Good. Now we're going to do the flip side of all this. Teisha chanios machros basar shkuta, v'achas machros basar nevela. Nine stores are selling kosher. One store is selling nevela. This is the case that we're used to hearing. This is the case that the Bavli goes over a couple times. Known as chafalo choshesh. Now let's say you bought it from the store, but you don't know which store you bought it from. So even though nine stores are selling kosher, but still, this is kavua, and kol kavua kemechza amechza dame. And therefore, it's a 50-50, and therefore, you have to be machmir. It's a suffix on an isa daraisa. What's the svara behind this? What's the rationale? So, probably heard me say this before. No problem saying it again. Don't know. Meaning it's hard to put a rationale behind this idea. Nine of the stores are kosher. One store is not kosher. And you bought from one of the stores. You don't know which one you bought from. So why don't we just simply say the majority? So this is a principle of kavua. So how does that work rationally? So I have no rational explanation for it. Good. However, but if the meat finds itself now in the street, which means that someone picked it up and moved it into the street, so now this is what's called parush. And called the parush meruba kaparush. Good. So these are principles that we know from the Bavli. And we get to go over here in the Yerushalmi. Amar Rav Yochanan nimsa biyad nachri kinimsa beplacha. Let's say you found meat in the hands of a non-Jew. So Rabbi Yochanan says a tremendous chiddush, and that is, it's like finding meat right in the middle of the placha. Placha is a form of Rishus Rabim. Basically, it's the town square. So in other words, it's basically analogous to Parush. And depending on the number of kosher stores over there, if they represent the majority, the meat's going to be kosher. So that is something amazing. The Gemara follows up on this point of Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Chagai, have a masmech la Rabbi Mana. So Rabbi Lezer was supporting Rabbi Mana, physically supporting him. Anyway, so so Chama lechadar mai mekateh min susya mapik labra. So and he saw a non-Jew and he was cutting a piece of meat off of a horse and going outside with it, right? Right, Labra could mean his son, but over here probably means he went outside with it. Anyway, so Amrlay, but basically, look, he's a guy and he's going to eat non-kosher food and obviously it's pretty disgusting. He's cutting it right off of a live horse. But the point is that, you know, they eat non-kosher food. That's what they do. So Amrlay, Hadai Damar Rabbi Yochanan, Hanimsa Biyanachri, Kanimsa Biplacha. So now he says, okay, could we go over that halacha that you said over B'Shem Rav Yochanan? Right? You quote Rav Yochanan saying that you find meat in the hands of a non-Jew and it's like finding it in the square. And it's almost impossible to imagine, right? Case in point, I'm watching this non-Jew cut a piece of meat off of a horse and taking it out with him. And you want to tell me now that meat found in the hands of a non-Jew is going to be kosher? Under the proper circumstances? So Amalei, Kenamar Rebbe Yossi, Amalei, Kenamar Rebbe Yossi, Rabbi, Vehein Sharao So Yotzim and Mekon Shal Yisrael. No, and you need the right context. And that is that if you see that he left the market made up primarily of kosher sellers, under those circumstances and only under those circumstances, meat found in the hands of a non-Jew is going to be mutter. Hopefully you're wondering, what about the idea of basar shenisalem in ha'ayin, meaning that if the meat was not under the supervision, under the auspices of a Jew, the whole time, doesn't that fall under the category of basar shenisalem in ha'ayin? So hopefully that bothers you. Good. The Gemara in Chulin is bothered by that very same question. The Gemara in Chulin, Sadi Dal, Sadi Hey, so it goes through the whole sugya of basar shenisalem in ha'ayin. The Gemara over there raises that very question. We'll end off with one more story for today. Chad Barnash b'Tzipori Azo Bay Mizben Kupan Min Tabacha. So there was a person in Tzipori, and he wanted to buy meat from the butcher. V'lo Yaivle. It just happens to be that there was a lot of animus between this guy and the butcher. Okay, we don't know the background information. It's not important for the point of the story. But anyway, so the guy wanted to buy meat from this particular butcher, and the butcher, whatever history they had, the butcher said, "Get lost! I'm not selling you anything." So Amalei Lechad Ramai V'Asilei. So this guy now, who desperately wanted to buy from this particular butcher, so he sent a shliach. Happened to be that the one he sent was a Roman. I would guess, but I'm just guessing, that the Roman had a lot of political force and influence, and the butcher could not say no to selling it to the Roman. Anyway, so he sold it to the Roman. So Amalei Lonisbas Al Karchei. And so now the guy went back to the butcher, and they hated each other, clearly. And the guy said to the butcher, "You know what? I know you refused to sell meat to me, but I got the better of you, because I sent in the Roman to buy, and you thought you were selling to the Roman. And meanwhile, the Roman turned around and gave it to me." So basically, he thumbed his nose right at the butcher. So Amar Lev, a lot busser and a obviously. So the butcher says back to the guy, "Oh, that's so funny. I know he was Roman. That's why I sold him non-kosher meat." Okay. So this created now a major tumult in the city. Because basically you had a butcher who totally acknowledges that A, he has non-kosher meat, and B, he sells it. Now, in his defense, he would say, "Yeah, but I'm only selling it to non-Jews." Well, that's crazy. Meaning, if you're a butcher and everyone's expecting you to sell kosher meat, you should be selling kosher meat. So Rabbi Yirmiyah b'shem Rabbi Chanina Maisa Balifnei Rabbi. So the case was brought in front of Rabbi. And V'amar lo kulaminei meisar mekulin d'siporin. So he does not have the kind of power to prohibit the meat in Tziporin. Meaning that as far as his account over here, so we simply don't believe him. He only said it because of the context of the situation. He hated the guy. The guy hated, right? The guy was just a thorn in his side. And he made up a story in order to basically try to really upset this individual. But the truth of the matter is that he didn't sell non-kosher, and you just look at the context over here, and clearly from the context of the story over here, he didn't mean what he said. He just simply said it because he was so upset with this person. Okay, this will be our stopping point. Let's quickly review our daf today. We started off with a couple of psukim in Malachim Beis, in Divrei Hayamim Beis. When Yehoyada set up a pushkin in the Beis Hamikdash, did he set up one or did he set up two? And that was the final discussion of the sixth parak of the Masechta, seventh parak of the Masechta. So there were two parts to today's daf. In the beginning of the seventh parak, not one is that what happens when I have a coin found between the pushka. So it's actually the entirety of the Amud Aleph is easy to summarize. In that, number one, we look at the first determinant of that of proximity. Whichever it's closer to, that's the one it belongs to. This is the idea of karov. Number two is that if I don't have proximity, meaning if it's equidistant, so the halacha is that when we have equidistance, so then we're going to put it in the pushka, that's more machmir. We learned together this morning on the Amud Aleph that the pushkas are configured in a circle, so it's very possible to have a coin situated between pushka number 1 and pushka number 13. And then we spent a good amount of time in the first half of today's daf going over which one is the more chamer pushka. Good. That is the first half of today's daf. Second half of today's daf, more on the topic of finding money. It's unidentified money, and what kind of identification can we give it based on where we find it, when we find it, and other circumstantial evidence. That was the Amud Beis of today's daf. Finding money in front of Socher Behem on Yerushalayim, we assume that money is Meister Sheni. Finding money in Har Abayis, that is assumed to be Chulin. Finding money in Yerushalayim depends on the time of year. Rest of the year, it's Chulin. during regel, it's going to be Meiser Sheni. Those are the basic points that we went over in the Mishnah that brought us to the Amud Beis. In the Amud Beis of today's Gemara, more discussion regarding identifying meat. If you found meat from a store, meaning you went into a store and you picked it up, so it depends on what kind of stores we have and how many stores are selling kosher, how many stores are not selling kosher. If the suffix is coming from the store itself, this is what's called kavua. And kol kavua kemechza mechza dame. That when I have kavua stationary, the suffix coming from the stationary, so then the halacha is that we always go say 50-50 regardless of what the actual numbers are. Numbers are 9 to 1, doesn't matter. Kol kavua kemechza mechza dame. On the other hand, when I have the suffix being poresh, meaning it was taken out of the store and now the meat is discovered in the street. So now we go with Holchan Acharon, we follow the majority. Okay, this is the basics of Kavua versus Poresh. We've gone over this in the Bavli numerous times here in the Yerushalmi and Shkolim. So we went over in today's daf. And finally, Rav Yochanan's halacha that you find meat in the hands of a non-Jew. So you can assume that it's a kosher piece of meat. The Gemara was kind of like astounded by that. The Gemara ends up saying, yeah, Rav Yochanan's talking only about a situation where the meat came from you saw the non-Jew coming out of a kosher market where the only meat that was sold there was kosher meat. Okay, Adkan, we'll stop over here.